This is a true story.
The podcast you are about to hear was recorded in... Wait, where are you right now?
somewhere between Gary and Indianapolis in Indiana.
Okay.
On Interstate 65.
And New York in 2017.
At the request of the survivors, the names have been changed.
Out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred. Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as always, the Don Hector to my Don Eladio, it's Dan.
Good evening, Scott. I'm calling from the mobile podcasting studio today, rather than my bed.
Yes, this, I don't know if it's a first, I'm sure it's not a first in the annals of podcasting, but it's got to be a first for us. There's one thing to be podcasting on the road, but you are literally on the road while podcasting tonight.
Oh yeah, 71 miles an hour. But you know, we're pretty damn busy, and I'm heading down to meet up with some podcasting friends, including listeners to our podcast. So we have to show our dedication by recording in an unorthodox manner. Hopefully, the audio is okay.
Yeah.
If not paying for it, so fuck it.
There you go. And there you go. How long did we get to our first curse word? Yeah, any odd audio you'll hear that's not on my end for a change will probably be just the rushing of the road as Dan drives to Indianapolis, I believe, at this point.
Yep.
All right, so the one good thing about you being on the road and feeling the pacing of it, it probably means I should get things started pretty fast here. So Let's get to the first of our two shows that we love to talk about. On what I forgot to say is actually the Better Call Fargo edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I can't believe I forgot that. Kind of going mostly noteless here, so what do you expect? But the first one we talk about, it's going to be Better Call Saul. The latest episode of Better Call Saul was entitled Sabrosito. It was written by Jonathan Glazer, who wrote last season's Amarillo, and that was the one where Jimmy shoots the commercial while he's working at Davis and Men, our main, I should say. And it was directed by Thomas Schnauz, who we know has directed and written several episodes of Better Call Saul, as well as written a bunch of Breaking Bad episodes as well. Oh boy. You know what? Can I just start off right now by saying how much I absolutely loved this episode? I mean, a fierce, will rip naysayers to shreds kind of love. This, I feel that strongly about this episode.
Oh yeah, I was the same way. I just had a giant grin on my face pretty much the entire episode. It's like, this is so sweet. So freaking sweet.
I mean, obviously, a lot of that love from both of us, as well as probably any number of viewers. I mean, talk about scratching a Breaking Bad itch.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this could have just simply been a Breaking Bad episode that just didn't have Walter or Jesse in it, as far as I was concerned, especially the first half of this episode.
Yeah, this episode was, I mean, not only like a really good episode of just like, you know, any TV show, but I think it's really one that kind of spotlighted like the real potential, or more of the real potential that this show can have, because there's, you know, certain things that, you know, that are, as we'll discuss, are pretty likely to happen on screen that we now know about that we probably never even imagined we would like totally wanted to know what was going to happen. And
yes.
Like, well, man, that's just, you know, it's just going to be just completely fucking amazing when it does, and you can just feel it.
Oh yeah, I definitely, and I already know, have one thing in mind that we're going to be talking about probably in the next few minutes. Just going right to the opening, the whole opening scene, where, which I guess I should have seen coming that we'd get into these characters, but just didn't occur to me. Don Eladio and Bolsal showing up. I mean, I was like, whoa, this, it's a total Breaking Bad reunion again, and look how good he looks.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, there was just so much fun in that opening because it still maintained. It's interesting to see something which, I mean, basically everything we're watching to a certain extent is a flashback, and this all exists as a flashback of Breaking Bad if you think about it that way.
Yeah.
And so, especially seeing these characters who we know, we all know their fates as well, and some of them end up dead right by that pool, quite frankly. But what was funny about that is, despite that, there is still a significant amount of tension in the scene, as well as just an appreciation for the relationships and the competitiveness between these characters, between like Bolsa and Hector. Just the way Hector refers to Los Pollos Hermanos as the Butt Brothers, which also plays into the whole thing about Wheeler Gus Fring and his partner, whose name escapes me at the moment, whether they were involved in a relationship or not. Obviously, my feeling, I think I've changed my mind on that over the years. I think just because Hector seems to keep making comments about it makes me think they weren't, that they might have
That
had.
Hector, Hector's just an asshole and just like assumes that because he's just, spiteful and childish. So maybe it's true, but more likely than not, it could just be Hector just being a freaking prick.
Yeah, I think it's not true. I think I heard somewhere that Esposito, Giancarlo Esposito himself, didn't actually think that was the case. But of course, he's not the writer, so he doesn't know for sure. But and apparently, I think even the person that Hector brings to poolside to meet Don Eladio, when he had taken over the ice cream place, that's a character we also see in the second season of Breaking Bad, if I'm not mistaken. I think this is the second season.
He was, involved in some of the like the Mike shenanigans when Mike was having some truck stuff going on, I think.
Right. Yeah. And wait. Did I say second? Probably not the second season. In some season.
Well,
Again, I forgot. So I
that would be
apologize.
season 2. You're correct.
Oh, okay.
Because
Not sure. So, I mean, that was a lot of fun. But it was interesting because I felt like the first half of this episode, and oh, by the way, watching the counter, this episode is almost neatly divided, almost directly in half. I mean, it's almost bizarre how precise it is. I would love to see the script to see if actually the number of pages is almost equal from the first half to the second half. I suspect it very well might be, especially since they didn't do much in the way of like or any kind of like montage, even though it would eat up time in an episode, but not eat up time on a printed page. This was really. Wow, if people were missing Gus Fring, they certainly got a lot of Gus in this episode. But you know what was fascinating about it is, up until this series, Gus Fring to us has been basically a villain. He's a bad guy, a different kind of a bad guy than some, but he's very much an antagonist in Breaking Bad. Leading to one of the most satisfying season finales of any show, as we all remember his eventual fate there. But it's fascinating to watch him specifically. I mean, he did have that one episode in season 4 where we got the flashback and we saw what had happened to him with Don Eladio, which might have been the only sympathetic note that we ever got for Gus Fring that season.
Salud, or I think
Salute.
it was that episode.
Yes,
That
you're
was,
right.
I
It was
think,
Salute.
that's the only time in that season where he was, kind of the, a good guy. I mean, he's tended to have some good relations with Jesse after that point. But you could just tell he was just, using Jesse and just, for the most part. So
Right.
we really didn't trust him. But in that episode, I mean, he wasn't the big bad. He was the enemy of my enemy.
Exactly. But what's interesting here is he's used so much, and whereas we've seen Gus Fring used, a lot before in Breaking Bad, but it was always interspersed with a bunch of other things. Here, it's almost consistently all about his story in that first half hour, for the most part. it makes him an interesting character, because I don't want to say he's sympathetic exactly, but oh my god, you kind of find yourself kind of rooting for Gus Fring.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you flip the dial to Breaking Bad, like, you can't root for Gus Fring. That's just, that's inconceivable. You know,
he's definitely a bastard, but I could see, you know, a case could be made where, like, you know, people can take Chuck's side in this kind of case because Jimmy's such a wild card. So, you know, if you look at it through a different lens, you know, I could see a way you could take Gus's side because, you know, Walt is just such a complete, you know, he doesn't make the best decisions while involved with Gus. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, how we see Gus now. And then if we can ever have time to watch Breaking Bad again, it would be, you know, just kind of cool to see, try to see that from a different perspective.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try to make a point this year to watch, to finally do a true rewatch of Breaking Bad. I mean, I've literally got two different sets that have not even had the shrink wrap taken off them. Sitting here that long. So I'm like, there might be extras I'm not even aware of, you know, deleted scenes. But yeah, I'm definitely, after this season, to see, to watch all the scenes with Mike and Gus and whatever, to see how much differently they may be viewed watching him now. But this episode, I mean, I love that they used places that I just never imagined being used that way before. I mean, they're getting they're getting a lot of use out of the Los Pollos Hermanos set now. I mean, that was interesting. Getting his own employees involved in it was was kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah, when you think about, like, you know, like the shit that he has to go through just when that happens to try to, like, keep maintain his cover. Anyway, it was definitely interesting seeing him, you know, spin his little bullshit by. Well, you know, both, but just, like, you know, that was, you know, kind of a smart plan for Hector to do. Even though I don't know if he thought it through that much, he just kind of wanted to fuck with him.
Right. But yeah, that was really something. But again, and that was one of the things where you kind of like, oh, I kind of want to root for Gus, because we're already now trained to hate Hector.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like the, like you were saying, like the enemy of my enemy kind of thing. It's like, oh, so naturally we have to root for Gus against Hector. Because Gus and Mike are, right now, they're sort of on the same side. And when they had that great scene together, and that was really nice to see those two actors have a scene, you know, without any bodyguards or anything else going on around them. And I love the planting of the seeds there, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah, they've really laid it out. I mean, you can just tell. I mean, you know, we don't know what they're going to do, but we know what they're going to do something, and they've really, really set it up nicely here. And it's going to be interesting to see, like, you know, right now we're kind of rooting for Gus, you know, to get some revenge on Hector, but there is a point in Breaking Bad where, you know, we want Hector to blow Gus's ass up.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
The storytellers are pulling our strings very well, you know, not in a particularly manipulative way, but they managed to totally, you know, flip the script, so to speak.
Right. And to me, that's what that goes right to the heart of what I loved about this episode, especially this first half of it. Just for that very reason, I thought that very thing. It's like, huh, interesting how my loyalties are going to be totally reversed a few years later, you know?
Yeah.
So speaking of Hector, so now we should. Do you want to speculate any more? Because we've done this, I think, more last season, not so much this year so far, about how Hector eventually ends up in that wheelchair.
Yeah, we've definitely given it, you know, some conversation, you know, last season, and, you know, we're looking forward to the possibility of seeing something, what the catalyst for that event is. Now, I'm sure we both will agree that they're definitely going to do that. But other than the fact that there's a pretty good chance, I would say that Mike will be involved in the situation in some fashion. I'm not sure what they're going to do, but or what exactly is going to happen. But man,
it's going to be something, and it's got to be. I mean, it's got to be a combination of the Gus and Mike show here, as far as what happens to Hector. I can't imagine it not being. I mean, the idea. I remember once upon a time I was like, oh, he clearly had a stroke at some point. No. There's no way it's a stroke. It's got to be. Something is going to befall him. It's just interesting because Gus doesn't want anything done to him, although he's doing everything he can to screw him over anyway. But I'm wondering if there'll be one move too many that Hector makes that Gus decides, go ahead, or something like, and maybe either Mike's the guy or not. Because I love the idea that, you know, Mike doesn't take the money, but he clearly, he does, I mean, he doesn't clearly, he out now, so he doesn't reject the idea of working for him in the future.
No. And it's definitely, I think, you know, I'm pretty sure Gus wants, is going to play some, you know, actually have, like, a hand in what happens to Hector, too. Because, I mean, you can definitely tell, you know, he doesn't want to just, you know, have somebody, send somebody else away and have them pull the trigger. You know, he wants to, you know, he wants to be part of it. So how they manage to do that, where, you know, maybe both of them are involved in what happens. I mean, I have no idea how they're gonna do that, but it's going to be pretty sweet. You know, it's really, like, nuts, too, just, like, imagining, like, you know, us watching Breaking Bad for the first time. Just dealing with, like, you know, we didn't, you know, seeing Hector the first time, we just figured, you know, Tuco's being a complete maniac, you know, his TO is just sitting there freaking drooling, just being a, you know, crab ass, or just laughing at him, ringing the bell and stuff like that, and we, you know, as we didn't give it a lot of thought as to what, you know, what befell him at that point. But now, when this scene that causes that to happen, I mean, it's going to be one of the, you know, the top three scenes of whatever season it takes place in, and it's going to be fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just, I can't wait.
Oh, that's right. You know what? I keep forgetting that at some point, Tuco could still show up again at any point in time in the show.
Yeah,
because he's kind of one of the connective pieces again. I didn't even think for, so. I guess there's no way that he would probably have a scene between him and Gus because they're too far apart on the food chain. I don't think that would ever happen. Victor maybe, who we see, and we see Victor in this episode a couple times. At least one time.
Nice Breaking Bad callback or call ahead, maybe, just to the, you know, that kind of technique that they used before, just, you know, throwing some money at somebody. So it'll be,
right. Yeah, there's, flipping the page back to the opening, the whole thing with the money was just great. I wanted to, like, hug the writers for that. I was like, oh, that's just such a great little device, and it's just such a perfect way to get under Hector's skin. It's not just the fact, that it's so much more money, you know, although then you get, like, mine's bigger than yours kind of a situation.
Yeah.
But the perfect and precise way it's wrapped, which... It's just totally a Gus Fring kind of thing. You know, the way he presents himself, the way he speaks, he would never just, you know, dump out a duffel bag of, like, rolled up 20, you know, hundreds or 20s or whatever the fuck it is. Of course he would do it that way. And then you look at that, you think, and you fast forward to Breaking Bad and remember that, I start thinking about Walt's storage locker with all the money all neatly stacked like that and stuff. So,
yeah.
I got a big kick out of that.
Yeah, that was a great way to, you know, establish the tension for the episode that they, you know, they will continue to let simmer until it pays off. But yeah, it was just so good. You know, Don Eladio just being a complete asshole, you know, just pushing his buttons and just, you know, just being such a, just a slime ball, but doing it in, you know, a really passive aggressive way, a little bit aggressive here and there. And it's just, I mean,
oh yeah, I love that. Yeah,
watching Margolis. Is acting, you know, where he didn't say a lot during that scene, but you could just see, you know, just his pride and it being wounded and how angry he was getting there, and it just, you know, was really nicely done.
Yeah, and he has to find someone else to take it out on, so then he tries to, that's his whole muscling in on Fring and that whole thing with the cigar and everything, which was great because you start trying to figure out what's the dynamic here, and in this situation, yeah, Hector is still, you know, higher on the totem pole, of course he is, but, you know, Fring's going to do something about that, so very cool. So let's switch to the second half, and I like the idea that Mike, since, as opposed to other episodes that felt somewhat split, obviously it's usually the Mike and Jimmy show, this was more like the Gus and Jimmy show, whatever, but Mike's kind of like the bridge, or the connective tissue between the two of them. Because we can take one thing off our Better Call Saul bucket list, or whatever you want to call it. Mike encounters Chuck.
Huh.
I love that. I love the whole routine, him using the drill and drive, and literally driving Chuck, you know, away. And the fact of when he and Jimmy meet later on, there's I think there's a line he says about it was nice to fix something or fix something for a change. He said something like that, yeah. I think. I thought that was interesting because if you think about it, a lot of the stuff that Mike has done, you know, either even before he got to Albuquerque, has been with the idea of fixing something. But,
yeah.
But, and let's just say with varying results, you know.
Oh yeah, between the results of his half measure speech and the crap with his son, whatever. He definitely has a lot of baggage.
Right. So, but in a way, it was just interesting because technically he is fixing something. It's almost like he's also building something or building something from scratch here. But it's obviously a much different task than the stuff he's done before. But I love that they show him in the toll booth thing later. And he's actually reading like a handyman magazine or Mr. Fix It something or whatever.
Like he's thinking about doing something, maybe building something for his granddaughter or something. Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Which I can imagine seeing him do at some point, like a treehouse or something like that. But it's interesting. So that it seems like there's always this situation between him and Jimmy where one person is ahead of the other in doing tasks for each other. So it's always about like making things square between them, which is the kind of a line that Mike uses, I think, as far as Gus is concerned or something. But but it was I still think it's funny that I can't. Mike doesn't act like he likes Jimmy very much at all. So you wonder how that working relationship really flourishes in the coming years.
Because it's kind of like our podcast where, you're a little more serious and I'm just a fucking loose cannon jackass and, you grudgingly tolerate me. I think that's kind of the dynamic we have.
If only I could talk as little as Mike, we'd have blessedly shorter podcasts as well. But you can't really just grunt or glower on a podcast, even though I'm very good at doing both of those, quite frankly, as people who know me in person can attest. But the fact that, I don't find it odd if Mike doesn't react to Jimmy, making a joke about something or being goofy or whatever. But just asking him a basic question, as he would answer in his future investigative role that he would have, he just wanted his opinion on his brother. What's your take on him? Because Jimmy's take is always going to be different than anyone else's because it's beyond bias. It's he's too close to it. So I was feeling it for Jimmy a little bit, thinking, that's frustrating. You couldn't just give him an opinion. Give him a sentence.
Yeah, I definitely thought he was trying to get Mike to validate his somewhat negative current opinion of his brother there.
Right.
Mike just wasn't taking the bait at all.
Well, luckily, Jimmy's got Kim for that. And Kim was, again, awesome in this episode. We see her, making call after call after call to try to track down whoever the contractor is that Chuck would have hired, who Mike obviously replaces. But I love the idea that the way this episode felt, the second half, I should say, specifically the Jimmy and Kim stuff, or the Kimmy stuff, if you want to be that stupid. It's kind of like they're doing the conning couple thing again.
Yeah.
Which now I'm drawing a blank on what those names were. They had the silly names.
Giselle and Victor, I think.
Yes. Good. See, you're driving. You should have your head and eyes on the road, and you're remembering things. I have a computer in front of me. I can't even look stuff up. Yeah, I kind of felt that because then you have that whole scene in the boardroom with Chuck and Howard and then Miss Hay, whatever. I love the way that played out. And then what Kim does afterwards. But I'm trying to figure it out. Because clearly, they've got a scheme. They're running a scheme here.
Yeah.
And to the point where she gets the information from Chuck, she gets it out of him that there is another copy. In fact, what they destroyed is technically the copy. The actual original is where the hell it is, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out, okay, they know that piece of information. And Mike took all these pictures of everything, but the people they're dealing with, including Miss Hay, already know Chuck's situation as far as what's as far as you know how the house looks and whatever. So I'm kind of curious where this is going. What the actual scheme is? That's what I can't figure out. And I'm just maybe I'm just stupid. I'm just but I'm, unless they're expecting to be going before a jury, which it looks like you know that right now there is no trial. I mean, Jimmy signed off on everything. So,
yeah.
And I love that I don't know what they're doing because I just it makes it you know it makes it that much more complicated. But
right,
I feel stupid for not. Hey, Frank, what is it? What are they doing? Oh,
yeah.
Can I look it up online?
Yeah, you know, I really appreciated how this episode was basically. I mean, like, you know, I mean, we've seen a lot of episodes before where they, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they just split the story and you got two episodes, but usually, you know, one of them ends up getting a little bit of short thrift. But this was just like, you know, both halves of the episode were just terrific. I mean, they didn't, you know, not that they ever half-ass anything, but I mean, they were going, you know, full out with both versions of the tale there.
Right.
Here, and
What was nice about them is that even in episodes that we've liked a lot and that we would consider, you know, very good or even great episodes, but we would still probably say, okay, but push comes to shove, I really kind of preferred this part more than that part, or maybe this part ran a little bit longer than it needed to, or vice versa. This, well, first of all, like we said, they essentially cut the episode directly ahead. They saw that sucker right in the middle. I mean, I had the TV on. I noticed it was like at the 32-minute point or something when Kim appears on screen. And, you know, you can take out the first minute or so for the previously, whatever. And the episode actually runs about a minute too long. So it was like directly at the midway point. It was crazy. But I was equally satisfied and enjoyed both halves. And I was actually worried when we switched to the second half because I was so into the Gus Fring and break. And obviously it's the Breaking Bad nostalgia, which is really fueling a lot of that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But then when the stuff with Kim and Jimmy, I was already going ooh, and then but when Mike was involved, I was like, oh, I'm loving this, and you know, for a moment there, I thought, wait, is Mike gonna finally meet Kim? Is that gonna happen? No, not yet. Not yet. It's gotta happen. It's gotta happen.
Yeah. Did you notice in the diner scene between Mike and Jimmy that you know I noticed it? There seemed to be maybe doing more. Chuck having propane lamp foreshadowing because one of
yes.
those pictures
yes.
it was pretty prominent on there.
No,
so.
he even made a point of mentioning it. The fact you know it's on the all the newspapers or whatever. So you think Chuck might go bye bye via fire? I think you've said that. I feel like you've said
that.
In the past.
Yeah, that goes all the way back to season one where I got the impression mm-hmm. that you know, and it could just be that they're using that as a natural light source to you know to have good lighting in the episode, and that's why it.
Right.
To be prominent, but I think there's a little bit more there than that.
I agree. I think they even made comments, or I mean, in the episodes about the oven and lighting it or something. If I recall, I think they definitely plant again. I hate to use the phrase twice, but I'm going to do it anyway. They definitely, I think, planted the seeds for something like that way back in season one. I remember that, and I remember us talking about it back then too. And
right.
you know, our four of our loyal listeners probably remember that as well. But Yeah,
really, really, really cool episode. I mean, there, you know, we got the one storyline that's, you know, really really serious stuff, and we've got this little bit more mischievous Jimmy Kim doing something, which of course is going to be, you know, create some serious drama, but it's a little bit lighter and more fun, and we just kind of want to see them, you know, pull off some kind of like, you know, caper, like, you know, something from like, you know, not like Ocean's 11 or Catch Me If You Can, but just kind of something that kind of right now feels like it has that kind of vibe where they're just going to run kind of a fun con and we're going to enjoy watching it because we like both those characters.
Right,
it's nice.
And again, and exactly. And again, I love the fact that despite knowing what the far future holds, we still don't know what's going to happen in the immediate future for these characters, and I'm just enjoying the ride to get there. Okay. I think, you know, speaking of the ride, as you take that next left, no, just kidding. we need to take a left or a right, I don't know. And we need to head down to Fargo. Now, I love the weird background noises viewing them. Okay, He's not clearing his throat. He's not farting. That's just weird sounds on the road. I don't think they're coming out of Dan himself.
No growling cats this week on my end. Just road noise and, you know, rain because I have my wipers on now because it's sprinkling a little bit.
Ah, it's the okay. That weird noise you'll hear occasionally. It's the windshield wiper. That's what it is because it was a very bizarre noise. Now we know. Okay. So Fargo. The latest episode of Fargo was titled "The Law of Contradiction." It was written by Matt Walpert and Ben Nadive, who actually wrote a couple of episodes of The Magnificent Season 2. And this was directed by John Cameron. And I was surprised to learn that this man, after watching this episode, his only previous directing credits were a couple episodes of Hercules and Xena. That's it. And if and anyone who's listening to this and thus watch that episode, that's all this guy's ever directed? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So
impressive.
The title, just to get that out of the way, since I unfortunately established defining what the titles were in the previous two podcasts, even though I kind of don't want to do it anymore. This is an easy one, because the title, like I said, was The Law of Non-Contradiction, and this time it's not a term from the game of Bridge. It's actually considered one of the second of three classic laws of thought, and this one being that contradictory statements cannot both be true in the same sense at the same time. I don't even think we need to even bother running through it, but you know what? If you think about just this episode, but the setup of these characters, especially Carrie Coon's character, that's a law that is constantly and consistently disproved. I mean, everything about this character and her situation is, you know, it's contradictory statements that are actually both true. So, I don't know. I'm guessing that's why they chose that title.
Yeah. I watched the episode last night after I got home from work, and then you watched it, I think, this afternoon or early this evening. And I was just imagining, and I knew you weren't going to get to it as quick as I did, but were you watching the episode and just imagining, like, the huge grins I was getting in my face as various guest stars showed up?
Oh, my gosh. Let's talk about guest stars. Okay, let's talk about the first one who he wasn't the first one we saw, but he's going to be the first one I'm going to mention. Because I can't believe they went to this well again. Huh. Hello. I'm not even going to try. Was it? I could say his actual name, but I'm going to say Mac from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? Are you kidding me? Is it Robert McKelney, I think is it?
Rob McKelney.
Rob McKelney. Okay. Well, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So this is the second actor, or actually creator, one of the co-creators, now that I think about it, second co-creator of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia who's shown up on Fargo. So that's some additional cross pollination of TV shows that you wouldn't think would happen.
Yeah, I get the impression that at some point in the next couple seasons, you know, they're going to bring Charlie Day on or something.
Oh, Charlie Day's got a show.
Well, yeah, they're going to fucking do it. You just know they're going to.
Or Danny. Danny DeVito.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine if Danny DeVito show up?
What he could do with whatever fun, you know, character they put together for him. Damn. Yeah. And you know, that's cool. And it's nice that
totally could see it, but. Huh. Also, so you got him. Then the person I started speaking before you got a chance. Might have been your first go-to person. You got Ray Wise showing up here, who I'm assuming is going to be showing up on. Will he be showing up in the Twin Peaks revival or not?
He's on the very very long cast list. Okay. I mean, pretty much every actor that's like still alive that was on Twin Peaks is like on this one, other than a few. Heather Graham's not on it. Lara Flynn Boyle's not back because she was a complete freaking.
Yeah, well, she was. Yeah, I don't even want to talk about her. I'm not a big fan of hers. You know, the whole Nicholson thing alone nauseated me.
I don't know. Oh. You have to tell me about that if we get around to podcasting.
They were a weird couple for a little while, which just nauseated me. And by the way, speaking of Twin Peaks, very fast, I'm going to totally sidetrack our whole podcast for like 30 seconds. I saw a friend of mine online who's one of those persons who writes for a lot of action figure websites and conventions, whatever. And I saw an action figure set for Twin Peaks. And,
oh, that's awesome!
I mean, they're not even all that well articulated, but the four figure set I saw had Cooper, Log Lady, Laura Palmer wrapped in plastic, which that alone is like, are you kidding me? And Bob.
Yeah.
So I was like,
well, yeah, they have, you know, those Funko Pop things that, like, I won't buy my first one because I know if I do, I'm just screwed. I mean, you know, some of them are kind of cool, but there's just so many of them
I refuse to go near those things.
But they have one of those is Laura Palmer wrapped in plastic too, and it's just
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's fun. But I saw the figures you were talking about. That's,
I would, and those I'd almost want to leave in the packaging because I think they got the logo and the red curtains and the whole thing. Okay. Anyway, back to Fargo. So anyway, yeah. So Ray Wise. So that was kind of fun to see Ray Wise show up here. Also, it's a nice rarity for Ray Wise to show up in anything where he's not kind of at least slightly evil.
He was cool on Psych, but you know, normally we see him as, you know, a little bit less stable character or whatever.
Right. I mean, sure. I've seen him as nice guys or goofy guys in certain shows, but generally speaking, he more often is typecast as some malevolent corporate or big evil politician type or whatever. And another nice little piece of casting they did in this episode, which we might have neglected to mention if we didn't say it now. Not only do you get Frances Farmer in the episode, she's the waitress, the grown up. Oh gosh, I forgot the character's name. I'm forgetting her name in the episode. This is what happens when you don't write notes.
Yeah,
you know who I'm talking about. The girl, because the younger version of her in the flashbacks, it's her daughter.
Where do I know her from? Because I didn't take the time to look it up because they usually don't get that information up quick. But where do I know her from? Because I just couldn't quite get it.
I don't know if I know her from anything, but I know. I mean, I know who she is because not only is she Francesca, Frances Farmer's daughter, that also makes her Clint Eastwood's daughter. She's Francesca Eastwood. If you take a look at her and then you go look at Scott Eastwood, like, Eastwood's got some good-looking kids. She looks, you know, she looks like a few other actresses to a certain degree. So I remember thinking, oh, she looks a little bit like, you know, Amanda Siegfried. She's got a little bit of this going, a little of that going. While I'm talking to you, I'm actually looking her up to see if maybe we should know her from something.
But yeah. It'd
be funny if it was like her first role. Here we go. Well, she was in the movie. She was in a Clint Eastwood movie. That means nothing. Oh, you know what? She's going to be in the first episode of Twin Peaks.
Ha ha! Awesome. I think they're having some new I don't know. I guess I won't say anything, but that's cool.
Hopefully I know, and now I know what I know her from. Oh, you didn't see it, but I've seen it. When they brought back Heroes, that Heroes Reborn thing, she's actually she was in that. Not that much before that though. Anyway, back to Fargo. So this episode, and I liked how a week ago, I guess it was a week ago, when we were talking about Carrie Coon and her character Gloria Bergle, but we were talking about Carrie Coon specifically, how it was funny how certain things that were happening to her character in Leftovers seemed to be happening to her character in Fargo. I think it was like issues with technology and things like that. I'll also point out that on at least two occasions, but one where it was really with hardly anyone else in it, we had, on the Leftovers, you had episodes that were just all about the Carrie Coon character and abandoning the rest of the ensemble pretty much.
Yeah.
And I think this is the first time they've done that on Fargo, on any of the three seasons, where it really was just about one character and we really didn't see any of the other characters. I can't remember it ever happening before.
I don't think they had any, I don't think they had any Just Lester episodes. I mean, maybe, but I don't.
I'm pretty sure they didn't. I'm gonna say they didn't because I think I remember that. And what's fascinating about this episode? Well, there's a lot of things fascinating about the episode. This episode really doesn't do anything in terms of forwarding the plot of the show.
No,
there's nothing you can say that happens in this episode that really moves anything forward and the only thing that maybe you can say it does is probably the only wacky coincidence. I almost had to go, really? Oh, you know what? I love the episode so much, I don't care. The fact that she spots the thing on the rim of the toilet that Thaddeus, is it Mosley? Thaddeus Mosley? Or is it Mobley?
Whatever, something.
Well, yeah, you know, you people know what I'm talking about. Again, no notes. the fact that she turned, I don't remember if there was ever a comment about this earlier in the episode, but the fact that she ended up in the same motel room as her stepdad, although it was at least, let's do the math now, 25, 35 years later or something like that. But you go along with it because, you know, if we're not questioning UFOs in season two, then we probably shouldn't question that, frankly.
Yeah,
but
speaking of the motel room, the guy, the desk clerk, his line there where like, you know, he asks if she wants it hourly, and then she says what, and he's just like nothing, and he just delivers the line just perfectly, and it's so funny.
Oh, this was a great episode for me. I thought this was delightful. And I had said I commented it previously about the fact that we haven't spent that much time with her, and she doesn't feel connected to the rest of the story. And I know that this episode literally was not connected to the rest of the story. It's in Los Angeles, for God's sake.
Right, yeah. Everything that happens in California doesn't really do anything. You know, there's a little bit, you know, a few breadcrumbs at the end that they're gonna, you know, follow up in subsequent weeks. But other than that, I mean, you know, everything's just completely innocent.
Right, but it accomplished a couple things though.
Yeah.
And one of them is actually this episode made me interested in the victim. And I had no interest in him. When you see this episode, that flashback, I love the flashback story. I loved how the whole thing played out. You know, the fact that he was, and you try to imagine how that character in the 70s becomes that crotchety, slightly racist or something. I can't remember, or homophobic or something character. But the seeds are there. Again, I'm using that phrase again. That's three times. Take a drink. There's that line towards the end of the flashback about being a bad man. Right? Like, he was a bad... And I think... Oh, yeah. Francis Farmer says that. It's like... But she says something like, he was a bad man, too, or something, or not such a good guy, either, or something like that.
Yeah,
and if you think about it, yeah, he wasn't, not just because he almost murdered the guy, but you saw what he becomes and the kind of person he is, and maybe his views got distorted, and he wasn't the white, because he went from being a wide-eyed innocent in the 70s to, you know, this miserable, cynical, jaded old guy who ends up getting killed, you know, randomly for whatever.
Yeah.
But love the flashback stuff. I thought it was great. Love the Carrie Coon character stuff in this episode, which is really what I loved about it, because it gave us so much time with her. And she's smart, but she's funny, but she's also got that touch of being just a little bit oblivious to certain things.
Well, yeah, she's totally a fish out of water about, like, you know, like 90% of what's going on. But she still has savvy, you know, so she can pick up on, you know, stuff and, you know.
Yes.
Understand. Yeah.
Oh, and she. I love the way she just spins like a very simple line here and there, like when I think when one of the nurses makes a comment about something that had happened to the guy Howard. Is it Howard? Howard Zimmerman, the one who ends up in the we see in the hospital, and the way she doesn't just say, can you tell me more about that? She says it in a really odd way. It's like, more on that? Or something like that. I don't know if that's the one. It was just such an odd line, whatever. But, look, here's the thing with this episode. We're going to remember the Los Angeles stuff, sure. Absolutely. And the flashback story was great because it gave Noah Hawley got to go back to have the 70s feel again. So that kind of made me smile from the, you know, season two kind of feeling kind of a thing. And the Carrie Coon stuff was great, and the guest stars. But the thing I think we're going to remember most about this episode, the thing I know I'm going to remember the most about this episode, I just sat through the saddest cartoon I've ever seen. Wally is a chuckle fest. <You know? laughs> I felt so empty and sad watching what happens, and I guess what they did, the whole idea is that they're animating the story that he won the award for. And Carrie Coon is narrating it, and I get the it's implied pretty strongly at least twice in the episode that she's actually it seems like she's actually dreaming this, that because it seems like she keeps waking up during it or something. Oh my god, it's so horribly sad. I don't even know what to say about it. It's just. It's sweet, but it's so sad. And I'm literally wiping away a tear just thinking about it as we're speaking. That's how sad it was. Or how sad I am, I don't know.
No. Yeah.
But did you see that one coming?
No. I mean after the last couple of weeks, you know, I didn't really know what to expect, but I mean they definitely this really felt more like a Legion episode than a Fargo episode.
Yep.
That it worked. I don't know if it's something we want to see every week on the show just to make it good, because I mean then we would just end up being, you know, I mean I think we both want to have, you know, both shows have their own feel, but when they kind of tapped into those stylistic choices this week, it really kind of worked, you know, it worked very well, and at least for us, I'm sure, you know, some people won't
I didn't finish watching the episode until before 20 minutes before we got on the phone with each other tonight. So I have no idea what the critical reaction has been to this, or the social media reaction, or whatever. Obviously I was thinking Legion, because they had their own animated situations there, if I recall.
Right.
But the funny thing is and what made it such a glorious fusion of elements in this episode is, on one hand, you got Noah Hawley. And, you know, I don't care if these other guys wrote it. I don't care if this other guy directed it. You know, you're not going to tell me this isn't a Noah Hawley idea. Until I hear otherwise, it's got to be. So you've got the definite kind of the out-of-nowhere Legion kind of feel there. But, good Lord, this kind of also brought back a lot of Coen Brothers stuff throughout the movie, the episode.
Oh, yeah.
But I think... And I think there was a little bit of that feeling in the premiere as well, but I think I was just more enjoying it much more in this episode. I could feel the callbacks to everything from the original movie of Fargo to all these other things. You can kind of say, oh, that's kind of, you know, that character kind of reminds me of something from, I don't know, like Barton Fink or something like that, or she's her scene in the bar is like what's her name, Frances McDormand's weird scene in the bar in the original Fargo, just the whole awkwardness of it or something. Except the guy that at least McDormand was with, you know, he's kind of a sad sack, you know.
Yeah.
This character that It's Always Sunny plays here. And I did that because I still don't want to bother trying to pronounce his last name right now. He wasn't really that much removed from early seasons of Mac. It's Always Sunny. Of course, now that Mac is fully gay, not so much. But the early goings. Spoiler for Sunny fans who haven't watched the last season.
But you're right. That's definitely, you know, it felt more, you know, it also in a way felt more like a Fargo episode. And it just kind of, you know, even though they changed up the way they did things this week, you know, in comparison to the first two episodes, it kind of feels like those episodes were kind of, you know, maybe trying a little bit too hard to, like, you know, establish a kind of cool environment for the show. And this one just kind of made it seem effortless.
I agree. It's always a problem when you watch anything. It's when stuff starts to feel just you're forcing things and you're trying to like really. Yeah. I will be open mouth and in awe of things when I realize that, oh, they have orchestrated things beautifully here, and I didn't realize what was happening as it was going on. And you can think of any number of shows where you've seen that happen, an episode, and you know, and ones that we talked about already on this podcast as well as others. It's a problem when you feel there's a lot of effort going into moving pieces around the chessboard, so to speak.
Yeah, when you feel the hand of the writer.
Yeah, it shouldn't, and I don't mind it if it's about, you know, a certain level of, say, character affectations or something like that. It's like, okay, he's, you know, he gave him a nervous tick or this or that, whatever. But when it's like, I believe there's just one too many machinations that, you know, or one too many coincidences that need to happen for something to get to something. It's like the Rube Goldberg thing. And that's what I think. That was one of my bigger problems in the premiere. I felt there were just too many things that had to happen to lead to what happens. And I at a certain point, I was like, eh. And I know that's happened. I mean, even the original Fargo has an element of that. But I don't think, I never felt like there was that many steps to get to where that led. And this, it felt right. like they had to do a lot. And my other issue, and I think we talked about it as well, I didn't believe that character would do the things that he did the way I believe, say, like Steve Buscemi's character would do what he does in Fargo or something. Or the character played by the actor whose name I also am going to forget right now. Who always plays like the bad Russian guy on every other show I've ever watched.
Yeah, Peter Stormare.
Yes, Peter Stormare, right. He's typecast, but he's great typecast. So there you go.
Yeah. And at least, you know, I mean, you know, he tends to play, you know, the same kind of guy, but, you know, at least I'm like, I enjoyed, I never finished The Blacklist, but at least when I saw him on there, I mean, it was a, you know, pretty decently
removed kind of
guy.
Yeah,
he was fun. And it's nice to see, yeah.
But, so this, again, we got an episode that it's almost like you just want to watch it just for the joy of watching this episode. And it's again, and maybe it's why it's nice that to a certain degree it's very self-contained, because it really doesn't impact anything beyond maybe the very, like you said, like the very end where they figured out, oh, they found the fingerprint that it's this guy who got crushed by an air conditioner. And so like, got crushed in an air conditioner, it's the middle of December, you know, quite frankly, most people take their air conditioners out of their window when it's the, I don't, but I know most people do, from what I understand.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Speaking of that scene, did you see the news about Jim Gaffigan over the last week that kind of came out?
No. What happened?
There was something where his wife had like a, you know, had like some kind of brain tumor that they had removed or whatever. So it went fine. Look, you know, everything was whatever. But I suspect that, you know,
that might be why he pulled out of the show.
Yeah, because we were wondering about that last week. So,
my gosh, okay,
that
makes sense. That would be a good reason, because that would be also be a reason that wouldn't have been publicized.
You know, right,
that's a very personal, private matter kind of thing.
Right, yeah, and he's a good guy with, you know, good family and stuff. So it's cool that, I mean, well, you know, obviously nobody would, you know, he would do, but it's you know, looks like it worked out nicely for him.
I'm gonna make a prediction right now that, in some way or another, Jim Gaffigan will have a role in season 4 of Fargo.
Yeah,
and they'll absolutely find a role for him. And maybe instead of being a deputy or whatever, he'll be like some you know, shitty businessman or a guy who sells typewriters or something.
Yeah, or a hitman. It'd be cool to, you know, that'd be fun to see.
Gaffigan is a hitman. Oh, Lord. But yeah, again, really an enjoyable episode that had so many things going on, and not many episodes of television that I can think of made me laugh or smile, and then made me really sad all in the same episode. I almost don't want to watch the, I mean, oh my, the part where they pull off the android's arm. I was like, oh, stop, please make this stop. It's the set. I'd rather watch Bambi's mom get shot. Please make it stop.
See, but it was definitely a cool week for TV, for the shows that I watch, because I mean, you know, Saul was awesome, this was awesome, and, you know, I really enjoyed the episode of The Leftovers, and they all were like, you know, there really wasn't much you could, you know, no, not many similarities between all three shows.
By the way, it's been such a busy week for me. I've only seen like the first 10 minutes of The Leftovers.
No.
You didn't spoil anything, don't worry. But that's how far behind. I haven't watched The Americans yet. I only watched one of the superhero shows.
Yeah.
But Leftovers is one of the things I've got to get to. But yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard some people don't like it. That's why.
Just, you know, certain people, you know, like certain things, and that's fine, but I really liked it, and I'm smarter than the people that didn't like it, so screw them.
There you go. Yeah. And you know what? In about 24 hours, you can tell them all that.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, again, wanting to be mindful of that fact that you are driving down the road, and I keep thinking, get your motor road. It should be playing in the background every time you talk.
Yeah.
I say we should probably wrap the sucker up, so you hopefully can find some time in between pit stops to do your producing magic on it as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll have time to do it tonight or tomorrow night, but I'll put her together. Now I'm about to make a fuel stop, so if we talk for a few more minutes, you guys, the listeners, can enjoy the riveting me putting gas in the Prius that's about to happen.
All right, and keep that in mind, that the later you get this, it's all on him. But you, anyway.
Yeah.
So if you enjoyed this podcast, and
ooh, White Castle.
You did. God. Oh, wait, I'm supposed to say it is a wrap-up thing. All right, do we do it that way again? I don't remember. Now it's time for the wrap-up. Silence. Music playing. Okay, now, if you enjoyed this podcast, chances are you'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Fargo, like Better Call Saul, like The Leftovers. Heck, we talk about a lot of shows there, even some crappy ones. You can also find us on iTunes, the very same way. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us. I don't know why we don't seem to acquire those anymore. We got a good sounding number, and only a few of them are friends of ours. Maybe one or two are probably fake. But I know 39 is an age we no one wants to go beyond, but I kind of want our. We've been stuck on 39 for I don't know how long now.
Yeah, we got to make up for that pathetic piece of shit loser douchebag that left the 1-star review. So, you know, just, you know, do what you got to do. Get a few reviews for us. It'll help up for that fucking pond scum.
I promised all those specialty podcasts if we hit certain numbers, but we just didn't. So, oh, well.
Yeah.
No all singing podcast or all rhyming, whatever the fuck it was I said. Anyway, finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in... You probably didn't hear any of that out there because of doing the gas thing. STVD.
No, I can hear you.
Oh, no, you can hear me. I don't think they can hear me. Serious TV Drama Podcast. We don't really use Twitter feed as much as we should. But then again, we don't have enough people following us, so screw that, too. Wow, we're really mean today. Anyway. again, I think we will be getting together under slightly more normal circumstances next week. To cover the next two episodes of both Better Call Saul and Fargo. I will be joining at least a few of our other podcasters later this evening or shortly to talk about at least one of the superhero shows that we're on this week. I think between my schedules and everyone else's, we're only going to be focusing on one, which is okay. That's the one I wanted to focus on anyway, because it's the only one I watched. And you won't be able to watch that one.
No, I watched it, so I might be able to join in that, depending on how many miles I have left between Indianapolis and wherever the hell I am. I think I'm in Lafayette, Indiana right now. And there's a tanker truck backing up.
Yeah, we hear it. It's yeah.
It's loud.
I don't know if we need to. You can skip the podcast if you want, Dan. It's up to you. All right, anyway, you know, I couldn't imagine a better time to fucking put an end to this. So, thank you for joining me while you were on the road there, Dan. So, good night to you.
Yeah, it was fun.
And good night to everyone out there.
Yep, good night, y'all.